Well, good morning, church. My name is Max Heller. I'm the campus development pastor here at the UB campus, and it's good to be preaching this morning. I have taken a little time off from preaching on Sunday mornings because I was serving as a sophomore Bible teacher with the high school here at Grace. And a lot of you don't know that, but it was a cool opportunity. The principal came to me and just asked if for 1 year I would step in and be a sophomore Bible teacher. We went through the epistles and wisdom literature, and it was a lot. It was a ton. And I have a great appreciation for our teachers and maybe college, I was this excited for summer, but I am so excited for summer. It brings a whole nother level. So I feel back in it with the school, and it was an awesome opportunity. And one of the reasons that I jumped on it and said, yes, I would love to do that is I wanted to have an opportunity to experience the people and the mission of this place, really 6 days a week. We use this facility on Sunday mornings and we share it, and I wanted to know the people at the school. I wanted to form relationships and see what they do, and what I came away with was feeling inspired by the people who are teaching Jesus to the next generation as a part of Grace Community. So you need to know that it's not just the people that are in this room, not just this campus, but you are a part of a larger group of people, four campuses, the school, our early education center. There is so much being invested in the next generation as a part of Grace Community, and it is so cool to be a part of that. I am so thankful for the opportunity to know a little more about our school and the way that it works, and to meet some people, make some relationships that I hope will last a long time as we share this space, but also share this mission of teaching Jesus. You may know this, but on Sunday mornings, there's another group of people who are teaching Jesus to the next generation. Our Grace Kids and our G56 and our GSM teams, our student ministry and kids ministry, is in our hallways teaching Jesus, talking about how Jesus loves them. The mission for Grace Kids is to partner with parents in our church and community to raise kids that love Jesus forever. And my two boys are back there, and I think about the fact that that mission gets me excited, that I have a group of people that are partnering with me. They're not just taking my child on Sunday and then passing them back for the rest of the week. We're partners together. So I'm welcoming them into my life. I'm asking for Grace Kids to be a part of supporting me through baby dedications and teaching me what it looks like to trust the church to be a part of discipling my sons. I'm letting them walk with me through things like baptism classes. I'm bringing my boys to events like Summer Ignite, or I'm bringing my boys to events like Easter Jam, or Jingle Jam, or Family Connect. I'm engaging with this ministry on a consistent basis and hoping that they'll engage with me too. And so parents in the room, don't think of Sunday morning as the pass-off. We want you to be a part of it. We want you to be a part of discipling the next generation, and we want to be a part of your life too. When we pass that child back to you, we're not wiping our hands clean and saying, see you next week. But it's a relationship where we partner with parents. And we're doing something similar in our G56 and GSM ministries. And the season of life is different. We know that the culture that these kids are growing up in is one where they will, at the age of becoming a teen, they'll look for voices, other voices in their life, people that they can trust, have conversations with. And so one of the incredibly cool things that our GSM and G56 programs are doing is, again, partnering with the parents to create that web of influence, that web of people that are teachers and coaches and youth leaders and parents and grandparents, and helping these students that we get the opportunity to teach Jesus to help them walk through these seasons of life, whether it's through programs or curriculum or small groups. Both ministries do an incredible job of creating small group opportunities for them to kind of be in a group of less people and talk about real questions and talk about real things that they're going through. And so we appreciate so much our student ministry and our kids ministry, and honestly, being a part of Grace Community, recognizing that there is a lot being done to invest in the next generation. I'm so thankful to be a part of not just Grace Kids and GSM, but also the fact that we are getting to invest in the next generation in a big way in Tyler. And so we're going to be in Matthew 22 today. And so if you want to turn there, we're in Matthew 22. We're talking about the parable of the wedding feast. Wedding feast. So weddings. Anybody been to a wedding? Sweet. I've been to quite a few weddings. And today we're talking about a wedding feast. And so one of the things about Jesus as a communicator and as a teacher is that he understands and knows his creation. So we look at the first verse and it says, so chapter 22 of Matthew, verse 1 says, "And again, Jesus spoke to them in parables, saying." So Jesus speaks to people in parables, knowing his creation, being a gifted communicator and teacher, knowing how to communicate truth to a group of his creation. He recognizes that this is a way that we will learn. We will understand. I was thinking this morning as I was getting dressed, I put these socks on. These are my polka dot socks. Yep. And I thought about my buddy Will, because these were Will's wedding socks. So I was a groomsman in my buddy's wedding, and he gave all of us socks to wear. I don't know if that's still a thing, but it was super popular when all my buddies were getting married. Everybody got, like, socks. It makes up, like, 80% of my wardrobe, which either means I've been to a lot of weddings or I don't have a lot of socks, but I'm not going to tell you which one. So I'm putting these on, and I'm thinking about Will, and I'm thinking about his wedding, and I'm thinking about how much I love my brother Will and how much I care about him and his wedding and the things that we did at his wedding and the celebration that it was. I have a connection. There's something, a hook that connects me to that moment, that time that I spent. And Jesus, when he speaks in parables, he's giving us this hook that we can think about the weddings we've been to or weddings that we'll go to. We'll remember the wedding feast and God's pursuit of us. And so he understands his people. He understands how to communicate and how to teach. I am on staff with the UB team especially. I'm kind of the analogy guy. I don't know if you guys know someone like this, or maybe you are, where like every third sentence starts with, you know, it's like if you, and then some weird analogy pops out, and like 50% of the time it lands, and you're like, oh, that makes more sense. And then 50% of the time you're like, I feel like I'm more lost. That doesn't make any sense to me. And obviously, I am not. 50% is not very good. I need to really up that. But you should ask Chrisley. It doubles at home. I'm like even more the analogy guy. And as I've thought about it, I've thought about, why do I use analogies so much? Like, but I really do enjoy it, and I can't help myself. I get to it's like, and it's just the analogy's coming out. I gotta say it because it makes so much sense in my head. I think I do that when I am attempting to make a point that I want to be communicated clearly. Sometimes there's disunity, and I'm talking to somebody that I want them to understand where I'm coming from. And so I use an analogy thinking, man, we're really missing each other. Maybe if I give you an analogy, it'll make more sense. Or there's something that I just am really passionate about and I care about, and I want it to be communicated clearly. And so I try to find an analogy to say, you know, it's a lot like this. And so Jesus would use these parables with his disciples and some of his, I guess you could say, fiercest opponents, the Pharisees or the chief priests that would come after him and doubt him and ask him questions and interrupt him in the middle of teaching. And this is a good example. So when we look at the context of what's happening in this parable, Jesus is speaking to a group of Jewish leaders in chapter 21. And he's been teaching in the temple following his triumphal entry into Jerusalem. And the Jewish leaders are annoyed at Jesus' following. And Jesus had been teaching for a little while, and it's funny because these Pharisees, they've been listening for a little while. And at first, I think he taught, and they were like, oh, okay, sounds good, yeah. And then they went on, but as Jesus begins to gain popularity, and he begins to gain a crowd of people who are starting to say, man, this guy preaches and teaches with authority, and what he's saying makes sense. The Pharisees start thinking, okay, this guy's messing up kind of like our thing. They start to get political, and they start to lobby for people to listen to them, listen to their influence, and they start to feel challenged by the way that Jesus is poking holes in their rigid, legalistic way of following religion. And so they begin to listen more and more. And as they begin to listen, I think the Pharisees start to say, wait, he's talking about us. Like, Jesus is calling us out. And so there's this There's this picture of this in the context of what we're reading in Matthew 21. It says in verse 23, "And when he entered the temple, the chief priests and elders of the people came up to him as he was teaching." So they interrupt him as he's teaching. Jesus is teaching in the temple, and they say, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" And they challenge Jesus. They challenge the creator of the universe. And Jesus later in chapter 21 gives a very specific response that these Pharisees can't help but realize he's talking to us. In verse 42 of chapter 21, Jesus said to them, "Have you never read in the scriptures, 'The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing its fruits.'" Like, gulp, right, for the Pharisees? And if they don't understand it, Jesus wants to be abundantly clear in his teaching and communicating, and so he gives them a parable. He gives them a parable that they might understand what he is saying. Christ is pursuing those that are lost. And his pursuit is even laid out in our parable. So Matthew 22, verse 1 says, "And again, Jesus spoke to them in parables." So here we go. "Saying," verse 2, "'The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son and sent his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding feast, but they would not come.'" Attempting to shed light on this for these Pharisees, attempting to show them God's pursuit, the king who is God, who has thrown a wedding feast for his son, Jesus, and sent out the servants, the prophets, to invite those to the wedding feast, to check on those who have been invited but are not coming. They would not come. Verse 4, "Again, he sent other servants saying, 'Tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fat calves have been slaughtered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast.' But they paid no attention and went off, one to his farm, another to his business, while the rest seized his servants, treated them shamefully, and killed them. The king was angry, and he sent his troops and destroyed those murderers and burned their city." The pursuit of God is so filled with grace. The way that he comes after us, the way that he pursues his people over and over and over again, "I have thrown a feast, everything is ready. The invitation, you are being called. Respond. Respond to the invitation. Come to the wedding feast." I like in Luke's account of this same parable, and I'll read it to you. We'll put it on the screen. In Luke's account of this same parable in Luke chapter 14, he gives a little bit of insight into these excuses, okay? So starting in verse 17, as Luke is telling it, he says, "And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, 'I've bought a field, and I must go out and see it. Please have me excused.'" Seems like a good excuse, right? "I just bought a ranch. I need to go out there and see it. I want to mow it, get my hands on it, plant a couple live oaks. Like, I got a lot going on. Got a lot going on, right?" I don't own a ranch. I don't know how that works in terms of planting live oaks. But the next one's great, because I know nothing about oxen also. And verse 19 says, "And another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to examine them. Please have me excused.'" So, you know, I got to spray them down. I got to give them hay and grain, and I got to take care of my oxen. I'm sorry, I can't make it to the wedding feast. Good excuse. "And another said," in verse 20, "'I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come.'" Right? So I'm like, "I've married a wife, I can't be there, you know, I'm busy, got my own wedding feast going on, I'm not going to be able to make it, plus the ranch and the oxen, like, there's just too much on my plate." These sound like good excuses. And this is one of the problems for us who have heard the invitation. We have heard that everything is ready, but we haven't responded. Our response is being held up by an excuse of something else we've got going on, some big questions we have, or something that's distracting us. We are not yet believers, stuck in a place of not knowing if we're ready to respond to the invitation. God has prepared a wedding feast. My challenge for you today, if that's you in this room, is to respond. The invitation is to all. The wedding feast is prepared. Respond to the invitation. As we get back to Matthew 22, in verse 8, he says, "Then he said to his servants," so there's this group of people that have not responded, or their response is, "I'm not interested, I'm busy, I have other things going on." So he says to his servants in verse 8, "The wedding feast is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main roads and invite to the wedding feast as many as you find." What a beautiful picture of God's pursuit. The king's pursuit. "And those servants went out into the roads and gathered all whom they found, both bad and good. So the wedding hall was filled with guests." What an awesome picture of God's pursuit of us. This ragtag group of uncommon folks, all invited to be a part of this wedding feast, bad and good, filling this wedding hall. Invited to the wedding feast that God has prepared, that is ready. I think about my own wedding. I think about the planning of my own wedding and how I planned a wedding that was full of my friends, people that I love and care about, my family, and in all reality, people that I had a lot in common with. Maybe some of you have planned a similar wedding, or maybe some of you are dreaming of a similar wedding where your friends and your family are there, people that are like you. The wedding feast that God is planning is so different. It is so, so different. All are invited. Not just the people who are like you. It's not a wedding feast that is determined by how educated you are, what ethnicity you are, where you're from, what family you're from, your position, your popularity, your personality. God's wedding feast is so different. And I think what we do is we get so locked in on the wedding feasts that we have experienced that if we're not careful, we will believe the lie that the wedding feast God is preparing is for people who are like us. And that is not true. That is not true. But we still must enter the gates of the wedding feast. The invitation is clear. And to enter through these gates, it is through Jesus. The invitation is a relationship with God. And the way that we have a relationship with God is through Jesus, believing in Jesus, that Jesus died on the cross for our sins. The invitation is an open invitation to all. Just respond by believing in Jesus. We still must enter through those gates, even though all have been invited. And as a part of entering through these gates, we are putting on a new self. Colossians 3 talks about this, and we'll read this together later. But we are putting on a new self, a new garment, the righteousness of Christ, as we enter this open invitation to all wedding feast. We're putting on a new self. Verse 11 through 14 starts talking about this wedding garment, and it says in verse 11, "But when the king came in to look at the guests, he saw there was a man who had no wedding garment. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding garment?' And he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen.'" As the king walks out into this wedding feast where all are invited, there's something really out of place. There's someone really out of place. And when I think about an out-of-place thing at a wedding, I was thinking about weddings that I've been to and some of the more out-of-place things that have happened. I was actually the cause of one of them, and then my wife, Chrisley, was the cause of the other. Though what the author is saying here is far more serious, I think it's an interesting story to picture the things that were out of place. So it's a wedding cake, for one. My wife and I, we were not married at the time, we weren't dating at the time, but we had been invited to the wedding of my ex-girlfriend from college. Okay, so already a little bit of a strange wedding to be invited to, but we had broken up in college, maintained a good friendship, and we'd been co-workers for about 3 years when she was going to get married. And so she invited me, she invited some of the other people that worked together with us, and Chrisley was one of those. So here I am showing up to my ex-girlfriend's wedding, and my future wife, that I didn't know would be my future wife, shows up at the same time. And then our buddy Evan, who made the cakes for the wedding, shows up at the same time. And so Evan gets out, and he's like, "Hey, Max and Grizz, can you, like, help me carry these cakes?" And we're like, "Sure, we can help you carry the cakes." So we all start carrying cakes, and we're walking down this beautiful gravel road, and you guys can sense probably what's coming, right? So my wife will say it was a strong gust of wind. I don't remember any wind whatsoever. But she's carrying a beautiful velvet cake, bundt cake, with white icing on top, and a strong gust of wind knocks it over, and it lands flat on the gravel road. And so I actually have a picture of this. There it is, the wedding cake. And if you look at it, it actually kind of looks like it's supposed to look that way. I mean, it landed perfectly flat to where I was like, "Evan, maybe you can get away with just like displaying this. You know, it's like the chocolate rock candy's been sprinkled on top. Just make sure nobody eats it." So we go inside. This wedding cake obviously was out of place, so much so that it was thrown in the trash. Nobody was going to eat this wedding cake. It was no longer a part of the wedding feast. During the wedding feast, as we're having fun and enjoying each other, there's this moment where you do the bouquet toss and the garter toss. And so, sure enough, the last person that I think probably anybody wanted to catch the garter was me. And sure enough, I got it. I caught the garter. And then, keep in mind, this was before I was 25, so like insurance was a little more expensive, decision-making not all there. I wrapped this garter around my forehead, so I have a picture of that for you. For a good remainder of the evening, and here I am with the bride and groom with the garter around my forehead until a buddy of mine who had mentored me a little bit came up and said, "Hey, you should probably take that off your forehead." So you have these things that are out of place in this wedding feast, right? These things that don't fit. When we look at verse 11 through 14, as lighthearted as this might be, we recognize that verse 13 says, "Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen.'" This is significant, a significant part of our text, a significant part for us as people who have accepted our invitation to a wedding feast, to read about this wedding garment. And the more that I read this part, this idea of he comes out and says, "Friend, how did you get in here without having a wedding garment?" And the man's response is not to give an excuse, but he's speechless. I started wondering, what is this wedding garment? What is he wearing? And I started thinking, maybe the wedding garment is a garment of self-righteousness. Because we know it's not a garment of the righteousness of Christ or the new self. When we accept the invitation to the wedding feast that God is, the kingdom of heaven, the wedding feast that God is throwing, we put on the righteousness of Christ. And there's a new self that we put on that we read about in Colossians. But this person was very obviously not wearing that. Maybe he was wearing the garment of self-righteousness. Maybe he was wearing a garment that said, "I can do it. What I have done, the good person that I am, has earned me my place." Maybe he was wearing a disguise. right? Because he got into the wedding. I mean, he says, how did you get in here without having a wedding garment on? Maybe he was wearing a disguise that looked enough like the other wedding guests, but the king knew it wasn't the same thing. Maybe this is some of us who have grown up around faith and Christianity. We know what it's supposed to look like, but we haven't understood what this invitation is. We've grown up around Christian people enough to where we know what it's supposed to look like, but we haven't understood it. Maybe they were wearing a really funny and entertaining outfit meant to draw attention to themselves. I think about the garter around the forehead. To steal from the point of what's happening, to draw attention to themselves, and the king comes and says, hey, this wedding feast is for me and my son to be glorified. What you're doing is a distraction. Maybe it was a garment that looked more like those not at the feast, looked more like the world. And they heard the word party and they thought, why not? I might as well go, maybe I'll make a friend or two. They didn't understand what it meant to be in attendance at the wedding feast that God was offering. And what do you think was the hope of the king who threw this wedding feast? What do you think was his hope? I think it was that he and his son would be glorified and enjoyed. It's a feast, right? It's a celebration. It's a party. The Westminster Catechism answers this question: what is the chief end of man? And the answer that it gives is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. To glorify God and enjoy him forever. What is this wedding feast? It's a party. I wonder how many people, after hearing this parable, responded. I wonder how many responded later when they put on their wedding socks and thought, oh yeah, that parable. I wonder how many Pharisees realized that Jesus was talking about them and responded to the invitation that they had been given. If you haven't responded to that invitation, like I said earlier, I hope that you do this morning. It's an invitation where anyone and everyone is welcome. And if you have responded to that invitation, then I hope that you would know that this is the kind of wedding feast that changes us. Specifically in the parable, it changes what we put on. Don't miss what comes first. The invitation comes first. The order is not be changed and then you'll be invited. You are invited. You are invited. And your true accepting of this invitation will prompt you to put on a new self, and the fruit that comes from your life will change. We talked a little bit about Colossians 3, this new self. And so I want to read that to you and then give you some time to respond in prayer. Have a conversation with God. So if you will, close your eyes, and I want to read this over you. Colossians 3. Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.